From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. More than 2 months after 18-year-old Michael Brown was shot by police officers in Ferguson, Missouri, protests continue to occupy its streets and that of nearby St. Louis. So far, in what's been dubbed Ferguson October, thousands of trade unionists marched, hundreds picketed Walmarts to mark the August shooting of another unarmed black man, and activists for issues ranging from better pay for fast food workers to the plight of the Palestinians took their stands in Ferguson. Scholar Cornel West was among dozens arrested on what's been called Moral Monday. He said that's why he came.
We're here because we love the young folk. We want them to know that there's some older generation, brothers and sisters of all colors, who are willing to put their bodies on the line so that justice can roll down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream.
As a grand jury continues to hear conflicting eyewitness accounts of the Brown shooting, Ferguson has become both a magnet and a metaphor.
What's happening in Ferguson is a grim reminder that we're not yet in a post-racial America.
Ferguson today is a metaphor for abandoned urban America.
Ferguson has made it crystal clear to the African-American community and others that we've got to go to the polls.
It's also exposed the racial divide that had slumbered beneath the surface in St. Louis, resulting in recent ugly clashes between black protesters and white baseball fans at a Cardinals game.
Baseball protesters!
This is fresh meat and I'm causing problems.
Wave it upside down while we're the ones who gave all y'all the protection.
Let's go!
For a decade, Kenya Vaughn has reported for the St. Louis American, an historic African-American newspaper. Since the protests began in August, the paper has ratcheted up from a weekly to an up-to-the-minute Ferguson news hub. And Vaughn, who usually writes light features, is now producing vivid coverage from the street, streets that she knows very, very well.
One municipality over from Ferguson is Jennings, and that's where my grandparents lived for 40 years, and that's where I currently live. And that's actually about a mile from Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
What they call the Ground Zero, the burned out Quick Trip, was where I got my gas every Monday and Thursday.
How have your ties to the place affected your reporting?
The struggle for me personally is to have a certain level of integrity and objectivity as I report, because I remember as a young person, we knew certain rules and certain things to do to make sure that we didn't rouse suspicion. Something as simple as don't look at the police car. Keep your hands on your whip. Make sure your plates are up to date. Turn your music down. I mean, you get a drill, like, especially when you first start driving. I've felt targeted. I mean, my family members, people in my neighborhood, we've all felt like we've been targeted in some capacity from law enforcement. I was an entertainment reporter mostly by trade. I mean, I did soft news and feel-good features like so-and-so is turning 108 years old, you know. So you go from that to seeing people getting tear gassed. You kind of become a frontline journalist. No one could have prepared for what happened. But it was just so empowering to see these young people stand up for something that they believed in and refuse to sit down. If these young kids in this community can get the world's attention, then the least I can do is tell their story.
So it became everybody's beat at the paper?
Everybody's beat.
After the protests in August, Ferguson, as I mentioned, quickly became shorthand for police brutality, urban poverty, racial inequality, a symbol for the rest of the world. But what does that mean to you?
These situations that have been thrust to the forefront because of Ferguson, we've been reporting for years and years and years. So it was affirmation for us as we tell these stories to say, okay, see, this is what we were talking about. But the thing is, the dysfunctional relationship between especially the Ferguson police and the Ferguson African-American community has spilled over into the African-American community and white community in Ferguson. The relationship, which was cordial, has deteriorated. White people are afraid that the black people are, their intention in protesting is to take over Ferguson and run them out, which is not the case. And then the black people feel like they're still not being heard because nothing has happened as far as due process and moving forward with the case.
So just to be clear, no arrests, no trial date set.
Well, the grand jury is meeting, but no one has any answers.
What's your principal aim in reporting this story?
I just want to show people what I see, that these young people are out there every night in the elements, committed to doing whatever they can and use what they have, which is basically their voices, to show people that they want justice for Michael Brown.
So when a reporter from out of town tries to report this story, what should they keep in mind?
They should keep in mind that there's the potential for someone to be condescending when speaking with someone that they've made assumptions about based on what they look like or where they live. Canfield Green is a low-income housing complex, and well, you see the tattoos, you may see gold teeth, you may see multicolored hair, but these people are the ones who put this story on the forefront. They captured the world's attention, and I say they should approach them with that same grace, just like they would any other subject for a story.
Through your reporting, I met people who seemed to be the soul of the movement who I didn't know. Tell me about Percy Green.
Percy Green is an activist icon around St. Louis. He has been on the front line for my entire life. Even if it's by himself, if it's chaining himself to a building or whatever it takes to get people to say, this is unfair. And when I saw him at the protest and he had this big grin on his face, the look on his face was like, well done, babies, well done. I know he probably felt like, oh my gosh, all of that was not for naught.
So when you look at what's happening in the community, Ferguson can change?
If South Africa can liberate itself from apartheid, then Ferguson can liberate itself from the division and the racial tension if this becomes a platform for conversation. Uncomfortable conversations, but moving out of that discomfort comes transformation.
It's been 60 days of daily protests. What's it going to take?
Well, what it will take is for the police department of Ferguson to say, okay, let's talk. There has been no transparency in the case of Michael Brown, and that's all everyone has asked for from day one.
And you think that the national press coverage can help?
Well, yeah, because it puts pressure on them. If somebody is saying, why aren't you telling us this? Why aren't you telling this? If I'm saying this at the St. Louis American, it's one thing. But if you have the Washington Post and the New York Times saying, why aren't you telling us what's going on? Then the message becomes impossible to ignore, even though they still have been doing it. But
so we're speaking on Thursday. What's your next story?
There's this woman, this elderly woman named Margaret Morrow, and she comes every night. I've seen her there for the better part of 2 months, and she's there to protest, but she's also there to kind of love up on the protesters to make sure that rage doesn't get the better of them. She hugs them when they get angry. She talks to the police. She almost like the Mother Teresa of Ferguson, if you will, like a matronly presence to keep people centered. That's the next Ferguson story I want to tell.
Kenya, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Kenya Vaughn is a reporter for the St. Louis American and historic African-American newspaper in St. Louis.